April 24th. Welcome to the House Water Committee. We are getting preciously close to the end of the agenda. We apparently have a lot of love fests that have been taking place and have a couple more to go. But I think we have gotten most of the major issues that we were looking for pretty well under control, with maybe one minor exception, and that is the group that was to have appeared on Tuesday. I still don't have anything final from that on House Bill 3519, which isn't up today, but we will hope that we have something more quickly. With that, we are going to open a work session on House Bill 3047. Pete, please, tell us where we're at and what's going on.
House Bill 3047 is the wastewater policy change bill. We have amendments that have turned that whole process into a task force to potentially avoid a fiscal, which I have talked to fiscal and said the amendments would probably do so. So we're in a position now, this has been decide whether the committee wants to put the amendments into the bill and pass it out and recommend, and with a recommendation to ask the Speaker to rescind the fire for old ways and means.
And Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to thank Representative Cruz, who is not here, but for the record, for assistance in drafting these amendments. And this incorporates the comments that were raised during the last work session. And I'm pleased to see that we've now incorporated all the changes and hopefully addressed all the concerns that were raised during the two work sessions we had. So I'm very happy that this is moving forward, and thank you.
Representative Dingfelder is happy with the bill as it exists. One of the love fests that was supposed to take place this morning was between Representative Dingfelder and Representative Cruz. The good representative worked very hard with Representative Cruz to come up with a final language and amendments on this bill. And we are appreciative of the fact that they did. We think it's a better, the chair thinks it's a better bill now than it was and has better life expectancy than it might have had otherwise. So with that, if there's any further discussion, the chair would entertain a motion then that's appropriate for you, Representative Dingfelder.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the -3 amendments to House Bill 3047.
Representative Dingfelder moves the -3 amendments to House Bill 3047 to the bill. Is there any comment? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Dingfelder.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt House Bill 3047 as amended and pass it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dingfelder moves House Bill 3047 to the floor as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And Mr. Chair, I'm still happy to carry it.
We have to
rescind. We have to rescind the ways and means.
Let's restate our motion then. Would you withdraw your motion?
I will withdraw my motion.
And let's restate that.
Mr. Chair, I move that we send House Bill 3047 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and we rescind the Ways and Means referral. We request the Speaker to rescind the Ways and Means referral.
Okay. Representative Dingfelder moves House Bill 3047 to the as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a request of the Speaker to rescind the referral to Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Okay. We call the roll, please.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Excuse.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Excuse.
Chair Jensen.
Aye. Okay, House Bill 3047 is passed, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 3047.
Amendments will be here momentarily, hopefully on the first three.
Okay.
And yours will be here till about 9:15.
What about 2606?
2606. The last amendments were sent to you on the 21st. You don't have them in our office. They must have been sent to you directly. So we'll have time down. You might want to take that. Minutes off and let's get organized.
Well, I think go to a meeting. Where are we at on 174? We're still waiting a little bit for some amendments, and we will proceed with a opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 174. Would you explain this bill a little bit to us, Mr. Kess?
Senate Bill 174 reduces the penalty for minor voting violations. Not voting, voting.
We need the secretary.
It's still early. That's generally what it does, and I'll.
The committee gets their estimates. Where did this come from, and why?
This came from the Senate. Placed on a consent calendar, passed with 23 ayes, 2 excused, 5 legislative business. Actually, what it does is change the several Class B voting violations, 300 minimum fine, to Class C, 150 minimum fine, or Class D violations to $75 minimum. Under the current law, the voting offenses are Class B violations with a maximum of $300 fine, making the base fine $175 per offense. Proponents assert that the fines are too high for some of the offenses. Proponents assert that the enforcement officers recognize the severity of the penalty and therefore tend to issue warnings rather than citation. These types of violations include proper vote identification, failure to report destruction of vote, lack of identification number on vote, failure to apply for vote number, those kind of violations, and the lack of proper safety equipment such as fire extinguishers and sounding devices. So basically those are the penalties that have been reduced. And
the question is who brought the bill to the Senate? Who is it at the request of?
The Marine Board on the bill itself.
Right. The Marine Board itself requested it, but there was no. I could not find
an agency. The Marine Board requested it. Yes. Is there no one from the Marine Board around? In our
Of course, it might be looking at the end of the schedule.
I understand that.
Well, Myron's here. I don't know if you can.
I understand that Mr. Myron from the governor's office is here. Jim, do you know anything about this bill that you can tell us about it? The reason why the Marine Board might have brought it, and I know it may be unfair, and my apologies to you for the unfairness, but if you could add some information for us, it would be helpful.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Myron of the Governor's Office, and on this one I'm going to have to plead ignorance, Mr. Chair. I have not been familiar with this bill. All I can assume is that it is an agency bill, I understand, and it did pass the Senate without any opposition. So.
Okay. Thank you, Jim, and my apologies.
No problem.
Is there any comments, any questions from members of the committee regarding the bill? Did you want to talk on it, Ray? No. Okay. I'm looking for someone who knows the, you know.
The only question I had was regarding where the fines go, if it goes to the state or if it goes to the local, if it goes to a county, and I guess And I saw that there was a fiscal, no fiscal impact on revenues. I'm assuming that right now it doesn't sound like they're collecting many fines because they're too high, so this actually may increase money into the general fund.
Warnings instead of citations.
Yeah, it's like, well, yeah. So we may actually get citations instead of warnings.
We're going to, at this point, then close the public hearing on Senate Bill 174. And short of having somebody from the agency come to explain a little bit to us about Senate Bill 174, we'll probably be holding a requiem for it sometime next week. Okay. And we're still waiting on amendments from Legislative Council for some of the other bills that we have. So we are going to temporarily recess until such time as Legislative Council gets us those amendments. You're shackled to your chairs, though, members. You can't leave the room until...
Stand up.
You can stand up. The shackles will allow you to get to the coffee and back.
I'm going to go
To the rescue.
To the rescue.
I've never had
I won't tell anybody. I do for a store there. I supported one.
I tried to get an issue.
That's for this morning. This goes to
We had a nice
Bill Barrett.
Although I guess the weather.
That would be.
I'm going to be down there.
Well, that's why I sort of wanted to put it out because once the weather's nice.
Oh, okay. I'm going to take it.
We went.
Oh, it's meeting right now.
Well, yeah, it's late. Go on. 8:30.
I'll take it down.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, I do. It's every.
Yeah, that is huge. I think.
And there's two more. But I just love this area. This is like virtually.
open a work session. We're back from recess, and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3215. And you will recall we've heard this bill and subsequent ones before. They were on the Deschutes, commonly known or referred to as the Deschutes bills. There were a number of disagreements and issues that needed to be dealt with. You'll recall that the chair asked the proponents and opponents of the bill, as would have appeared with the Dash 3 amendments, to meet Tuesday morning and afternoon, around the clock if necessary, until such time as we came up with an agreement that we could all live with. They did this, and the chair would like to express his thanks and appreciation to all of those people who worked on this. We now have a Dash 4 amendment, which is in front of you, and we are in work session on it, and with that we would ask... don't tell me that these people ran off on me. Mr. Riggs to... the other folks who were in the work group who are here to please come up on a panel and explain, A, the amendments, and B, Anita, please, B, where you are at on it at the present time. Aubrey, two. Doug, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs here on behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization, which includes Bend, Redmond, Madras, Sisters, Metolius, and Culver. This was, I think, the third work group that we had, plus we had a number of other meetings. All told, I added up, I've been in, we've had about 23 hours of negotiations in the last 14 days on this bill.
I thought you were going to say in the last 14 hours.
Yeah, it feels like it. And I'm passing out a sheet similar to the one that I passed out a couple days ago that lists some of the major changes, and I've provided that for the members of the work group as well. All told, I think we had 53 changes that we've made to the bill since the first time you heard this, the bills. So, Mr. Chairman, are we on 3215 at this point?
3215-4.
Okay. The changes to 3215, the dash 4s, which you have in front of you, which I've just read, appear to include the recommendations that the work group made to legislative council 2 days ago. If you look at your bullet point sheet that I handed out in green, there are four major changes, and what I'll do is just run through those and explain to you who was mostly involved in those.
Mr. Chair, may I interrupt?
Yes, please.
On this sheet, it's dash 3, so I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing.
I think the substance is the same, right, on the green sheet as what you have, and you're going to explain to us what if any, difference?
Madam, yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, mine says dash 4 substantive changes to the dash 3s.
Yeah. Yeah, the very beginning of it.
Thank you. Absolutely right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm confusing myself at 5:30 this morning when I was typing these up, so wouldn't be at all surprised if it wasn't entirely clear. I've kind of lost track of where we are. The first major change is that we clarified that there are two steps in the surface to groundwater transfer that apply to a transferee. First of all, there is a sort of a grace period or a safe harbor period in the first 5 years during which an applicant can apply back to the department to transfer his water right back to the surface water point of diversion. And after that point, we wanted to make it very clear, as we have committed to do a number of times, that after that 5-year period, there would be an injury test, which is similar to the injury test the department currently has. So we did not want to make any change to the injury test after that 5-year period. And this particular point, I believe, was raised both by Water Watch and by Oregon Trout. The second change, the difference between the dash 3s and the dash 4s, we deleted the notification requirement. We had a significant discussion between the Water Resources Congress and the department, and as I think Anita will testify in a moment, we agreed that we would fall back on existing statutory authority, and she can explain that in more detail. The third change is related to the second change. We deleted the definition of municipality in the dash threes because it only applied to that one notification section. And then finally, we all agreed that we should add language requiring the department to adopt rules to govern the process for applying for a transfer and also for identifying the parties who ought to be involved at the beginning of the process. So I think on 3215, what you'll find is there fairly minor changes. We made some more significant changes to the next bill.
Okay. I don't need to have you repeat what Mr. Riggs has said, but I do need to know whether that is in agreement with your understanding coming out of the work group and, you know, where your threshold of pain is at with 3215-4.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Your fourth bullet point, Doug, regarding developing a set of rules to govern the process of transfer, applying for transfer. Do not the administrative rules currently have a process for applying for transfers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Flores, we do have administrative rules that cover all kinds of transfers. This is yet another tool to add to the toolbox, and because it is a new tool, there are some areas where we'll need to clarify the process.
Follow-up? Thank you. And so this is the new tool because it's after the 5 years and the person who wants to have them back. Is that the transfer, that new tool that we're looking at then? Just because I'm somewhat confused.
Yeah, Chair Jensen, Representative Flores, this is a new tool in that in the Deschutes Basin, you'll now be allowed to transfer a surface water diversion to a groundwater well. And it could be, in some cases, it could be miles from the surface water source. There just has to be a hydraulic connection, which is a new and unique tool, and is based on the study that we've done in the Deschutes Basin to sort of get us to the point where we can provide this tool. So that is really the uniqueness of the tool, is that you can go from a surface water source to a groundwater well and can be some distance from the surface water.
Gotcha. Thank you.
For members of the audience, the chair would point out that, as you probably already know, some of the amendments are not back there yet. They will be in a few moments, I think. The reason, as you also know, that we're late getting our amendments this morning, and therefore the reason for that confusion, but they should be along momentarily, I hope, on this. Anita?
For the record, Anita Winkler, Oregon Water Resources Congress. We had raised some issues with regard to protecting the district's...
Excuse me, Anita. And for all of you, the chair forgot his ears this morning when he came to work early. So please try to indulge me by speaking as loudly as you can without being uncomfortable.
I would be glad to. This is all the voice I have today. And this is slightly more than I had an hour ago. So maybe you and I can do hand signals or pass notes at this point.
Become part of the Love Fest here. I hate to be left out.
I will speak as loudly as I can and somebody can interpret. We had raised several issues regarding protection for the irrigation districts in their O&M costs, their ability to move water, and Safe Drinking Water Act implications. At the suggestion of the department, they have agreed to undertake these issues and to address them in the rulemaking process. And they refer back to a process they went through developing rules for the in-stream leases. That has turned out to be very successful and worked well for our districts. And so we have agreed to put our trust in the department with the agreement of the department and the agreement of the proponents that these issues will be addressed in the rulemaking.
Thank you. Do you have any other comments?
Just Adam Sussman with the Water Resources Department. For the record, we can support House Bill 3215 with the amendments, the dash four amendments.
Thank you, Adam.
Yes.
Aubrey, Are you...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Aubrey Russell with Oregon Trout, and Mr. Riggs' characterization was correct, and our pain is well below the threshold, as you put it, with the changes that have been made in regard to injury and also the language on mitigation for depletion to any other surface water source. So Oregon Trout is okay with this final version.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the panel? Doug, did you want to...
Doug Myers?
Yeah. Mr. Myers, did you have any comments you wanted to... Okay. Okay. We are in work session. There's no more comments, no questions of this panel. Any...
Is that a motion?
I'm waiting, yes.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the -4 amendments to House Bill 3215.
Representative Dingfelder moves the -4 amendments to House Bill 3215. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move a do pass recommendation, House Bill 3215, as amended to the floor.
Representative Dingfelder moves House Bill 3215 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Excuse.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Excuse.
Chair Jensen.
Aye. House Bill 3215 is moved to the floor, and Representative Dingfelder has volunteered to carry this. Now, it seems to me that she's kind of hogging this, so if anybody wants to arm wrestle with her for carrying it, why, we would be happy to take another recess while that match took place. And... seeing none, Representative Dingfelder will be the carrier for House Bill 3215. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3215. Open a work session on House Bill 3217. Mr. Tess.
3217 falls under the same category as 3215. We have -4 amendments. They worked very hard on them to clean up the issues related to the application requirements for transfer from municipalities to Chute's Basin.
Thank you, Mr. Test. Where'd she go? She ran off. Oh, Anita. And Aubrey, Doug, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if you'll flip your green sheet over, you notice I did two-sided copies because I'm a strong supporter of recycling.
We
also lobby for Metro, so preserving resources is important. There were significantly more changes both in the -4s and in the -3s to 3217, and I really believe that we made some major changes to the bill from where you first saw it, and I wanted to run through a number of those. As you can see, if you look at my sheet that says -4 substantive changes to House Bill 3217-3, the first bullet is that we restored a time limitation on the amount of time that transfers could be in effect. And we limited the department to approving a transfer for no more than 25 years. This was a significant point of discussion, a point of concern that both Water Watch and Oregon Trout raised. They initially had asked for a sunset on the entire provision. We ended up not agreeing to a sunset, but agreeing instead that we would limit the period of transfer to no more than 25 years. And so I think that moves us in at least in the direction that some of the people were urging us to do. The second is a technical change. it adds language to the first part of the bill saying that a point of diversion can be moved if it's necessary to convey water to the new use. So that's fairly technical. That's something the department raised. Similar to House Bill 3215, we modified the notice provisions at the request of Water Resources Congress. We looked at those issues, and we removed the existing notification provisions, and we added a section in the amendment that refers to ORS 540.520, which is an existing provision that the Water Resources Congress and the department both felt comfortable with. And I think they'll probably address that when they come to speak. The next bullet, we remove language regarding that nothing in the bill would preclude the assessment of fees in an agreement. We did that because the Congress felt comfortable that the department had existing authority to require such language in agreements that would be submitted to the department. And we're committed to work with them on that. The next change was that we required the Water Resources Commission rather than the department to be the body to formally adopt rules, and I think this is a technical change, but it does point out something that we made, a change that we made in the Dash 3s at the request of Water Watch, which is that we have a clear mapping, measurement, and recording requirements for the ag municipal transfers. And the concern here was that we didn't want someone to have 1,000 acres of water rights, give away 20 acres of water rights, and simply irrigate the whole 1,000 acres with their 20 acres. And this was addressed during the hearing a couple days ago. There is a process by which they could do that if they conserve water, but we want them to still have to go through that process of demonstrating the need according to the existing statute. We also deleted language requiring that the rules not be unduly burdensome. The department thought that that's already something that they try to accomplish. We had discussed significantly in the last two hearings whether or not municipalities that hold these newly transferred rights would be subject to the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act provisions, and the department and the Congress agreed to language that required that in the agreement there be something saying that any party would have to be in compliance with applicable state, local, and federal laws. So we think that's been addressed. And then the final change in the Dash 4s are that we've added reporting requirements. Again, this relates back to the first concern. There was significant discussion in the work group about putting a sunset on the bill. We agreed instead of a sunset to have annual reports on kind of a summary fashion of the legislature, and then at the end of a five-year period have the department report back to the appropriate committee on the status of the project, how they've worked, and whether or not it should be extended. And I do want to point out just two other major changes because I think they're important. Both Water Watch and Oregon Trout had worked with us on Section 3 of the Dash 3 and now Dash 4 amendments, which goes back to the issue of water spreading. And then we also added an enforcement provision in here at the request of Water Watch and Oregon Trout to make sure that if someone violates the terms of the agreement, the department has the authority to revoke the transfer. And I think those were fairly important provisions. So all told, I think we made... I counted 38 major changes to House Bill 3217 since the time that it was first heard in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. But who's counting, you know?
I'm losing track, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Adam, if you could, again, address your comfortableness with the amendments, and if everybody can talk about that, and as Chair Jensen said, your threshold, and if this meets your threshold, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, again, Adam Sussman for the record, Water Resources Department. We appreciate the opportunity to work on the Dash 4 amendments with the work group, and with those, we can support House Bill 3217.
Thank you. Anita?
Anita Winkler, Oregon Water Resources Congress. With three changes that were made the other day, this became much more palatable. One was, as a result, and I want to just thank Legislative Council. They had helped us address the Safe Drinking Water Act issues, and I think went above and beyond some of the requirements for the research that they did. The rulemaking process, the requirement to report to the legislature, and the statement about referring to agreements between the parties or among the parties gave us a great deal of comfort. This is so important to our members and to the cities out in Central Oregon. They've already begun negotiating MOUs to implement both of these provisions in these bills. So by the reference to those MOUs, it really took away all of our members' discomfort. So we support the bill as amended.
Thank you. Aubrey? and Doug Myers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Aubrey Russell with Oregon Trout. We are considerably more comfortable now with this bill than we were previously. We have worked with Mr. Riggs, as he mentioned, to reinsert the 25-year limit and requiring annual reporting as well as a 5-year reporting to this body. And as he also mentioned, there's a provision now to revoke the transfer in the case where there's a violation of the agreement. So we have considerably more comfort with this and are interested in following carefully how this tool is used in the Deschutes Basin. It's a very complicated system, and I think it will merit some further study in coming years to see what the impact is, and then I think we'll be reassessing our level of comfort with this. But right now, we're just about we're below where our threshold of pain is. So, and we thank Mr. Riggs, who's been very cooperative and, in working with us on this. So.
All right, thank you. Doug, I have a letter here from Water Watch. Do you want to enter this for the record? Okay, thank you. I will, although we're in work session, I will enter this for the record. It's a letter from Water Watch. And we'll get copies for the committee members. Any questions?
Madam Chair. Thank you. I do have a question on page one of the dash fours, under section two in the paren A. All of these temporary uses, if the person holds a water use subject to transfer, and the water use is defined as what?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Flores. Well, in this case, you know, while it talks about a water use subject to transfer, a water use subject to transfer is any kind of water use, kind of a generic term, that is at a certain point in its development. And there's a whole list of things that it's a decreed water right, it's a certificated water right, it's a permit that's been developed, and a final proof survey has been submitted to the department. So when you're talking about a water use, meaning in a generic term, subject to transfer, is talking about the point of development of the water use. But this bill only speaks to irrigation water rights. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of the first part saying it has to be to this point of development, and then the second part saying it must be an irrigation water right.
Follow up? So in the common usage, when we're talking about water use, do we also refer to that as a water right in whatever state of development it might be?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Flores, you know, those terms do get used interchangeably quite a bit, and the term water use permit and water right get interchanged. I mean, for us water aficios, there is quite a difference between a water use permit and, say, a water right, which is a water right that's been perfected and vested. So does that answer your question? They're used interchangeably.
Gotcha.
I guess.
Okay. We'll have one more follow-up. Thank you.
Therefore.
And then you say the person holds a water use. So in water laws, I understand it, even though it's not yet defined, the water runs appurtenant to the land, and I do agree that there is some raging debate about that. So rather than I'm just concerned about the person holds the use or permit in development of whatever stage rather than the land.
Representative Dingfelder, Representative Flores, I mean, this is a perfect example of a bill that we talked about quite a bit the other day.
And will again.
And probably will again, where the statutes use lots of different terms of art to refer to a water right. Sometimes they say the owner of the land to which the water right is appurtenant. Sometimes they say the owner of the water right. Sometimes it says the holder of the water right. So the statutes use all kinds of different ways to describe that. In our view, in this case, I mean, I would in general, depending on the specific circumstance, would agree with you that where we're talking about the person holding the water use subject to transfer, it would in most cases be the person that owns the land to which the water right is appurtenant.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for the panel? Representative Schaffler.
I'm just grateful I didn't see the word science.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for the panel?
Madam Chair, if I could respond briefly to Representative Flores' question.
You're not going to talk about science. It's fine.
No. I wanted to be clear on something that Mr. Sussman just said about the use of those terms interchangeably, and I don't believe that water use and water right are meant to be interchangeable terms in the context of this bill. I hope he wasn't saying that. That the water use subject to transfer is a perfected use, which has been proven. And
Mr. Sussman, do you wish to comment on that? Or?
I'm not sure what Mr. Russell is referring to, but a water use subject to transfer, a water right subject to transfer, is a statutorily defined term which describes the point in development of a water right. So this is just simply saying it's a water use. Use being a generic term for different types of water uses, subject to transfer meaning it's at a certain point in its development. That's what I meant.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Okay, we are in work session, and I will entertain a motion on the Dash Force.
I move the Dash Force House Bill 3217.
Representative Tomei has made a motion to adopt the Dash Force to House Bill 3217. Any comments? Any objections? So moved. The Dash Force are amended or adopted. I'm sorry. I'll take another motion.
I move House Bill 3217 is amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 3217 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Excused.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Excused.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Chair Jensen.
Excused.
Madam House Chair.
Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to suggest that you carry this again since the two bills are similar.
I was going to ask to spread the wealth a little bit here. House Bill 3217, as amended, is adopted. And would anybody like to carry this? I don't want to be a water hog here.
This makes sense, I think.
We will ask Representative Westland if he would like to carry the bill since this is his. Westland? Okay. Work session on House Bill 3217 is closed, and we will open up a work session on House Bill 3220. Did I say that the bill got passed?
Excuse me.
I said the last House bill passed.
Did she say that? No.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not.
Do I need to reopen it?
Yeah, reopen it.
I'm going to reopen the work session on House Bill 3217. House Bill 3217, having constitutional amendment, has passed. Is that correct?
Hope so.
And that will go to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and Representative Westland has been requested as the carrier. Now I can officially close it. House Bill 3217 work session has been closed, and we'll reopen the work session on House Bill 3220.
House Bill 3220 is what would be called the last of the three Deschutes bills. It has a set of amendments that that still keep the 1% or 1 cubic foot per second up to and including 500 cubic feet per second stream, and then anything over that would just be the 1% test. It restricts this whole process to just the Deschutes Basin with the current amendments. You should have them. They're the dash fours. I guess I could ask if you'd like to come up and, I know if the chair would like you to come up and give a little comment on it.
Yeah, Doug, would you like to come up? Actually, Adam, and why don't we just get Aubrey and everyone up here to talk about, does everyone have the dash four amendments 3220?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs with Central Oregon Cities. 3220 is the bill that Neil Bryant brought to your attention 2 weeks ago. He was not able to be here today. There has been a significant change in the amendment from the last time you saw it, in that it is now limited only to the Deschutes Basin. I believe that my cities support the bill, but I don't think that some of the other people in the building are supportive of the bill at this point, and I think I would refer to Aubrey or to the department to make those comments.
Okay. Adam, thank you. Doug?
Good morning. Adam Sussman, for the record, with the Water Resource Department. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I will anyway. We've provided testimony on House Bill 3220 previously, and this amendment does not change our position on the bill. We're still opposed. And in fact, although it limits the bill to the Deschutes Basin, this in fact is the only basin where we have calculated that we've reached the 1% cumulative reduction in stream flow, and therefore this bill would have absolutely no practical effect. We believe that, in fact, this bill will cause more problems than it solves. And with the bills that were just passed out of committee, House Bill 3215 and 3217, as well as having a comprehensive mitigation program in the Deschutes Basin, we believe we have all the tools plus some to accommodate new water demand in the basin and at the same time restore stream flow. So, again, we would urge that the committee vote no on House Bill 3220.
Aubrey, thank you.
Aubrey Russell with Oregon Trout. You've received previous testimony from Oregon Trout. We remain in opposition to this bill. I wanted to clarify, use this opportunity to clarify some issues that have been raised previously by other testimony. I believe that this issue will come before you again in future sessions, and I believe it might be helpful to have some of the attached information which I've given. I wanted to address specifically comments that were made by people testifying in support of this bill, the city of Bend and former Senator Neil Bryant, who claimed respectively that the in-stream water right, that the scenic waterway flows, which equal the in-stream water right on the lower Deschutes, are either never met or, according to Senator Neil Bryant, always met. And I have provided, which I think gives you the impression that trying to regulate for a number which is either never met or is always met gives you the impression that this number is in no way founded in a rational basis and is really at such a disconnect from reality that there's no point in trying to manage for it. And the opposite is true. As you can see from the attached information, I've included what the flows are, and then the third page gives you the Water Resources Department's information on how frequently those target flows are met, and I've highlighted that in July those flows are met are not met 55% of the time. And then finally, again highlighted on page 3 of the attachments, Water Resource Department staff have concluded that consumptive groundwater use above Lake Billy Chinook diminishes the surface water flows downstream. This is all background for the bill that you're considering. As Adam has indicated, the bill has been changed to have no practical implication because the water rights that have already been issued exceed the 1% even for the 4,000 CFS in the lower Deschutes. So there's no practical impact. It's not necessary, but I think it's very destructive in terms of the message that it sends, and I would hope that you would vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the panel? We're going to recess here for a minute.
We remain opposed for the reasons stated before and also in the written testimony before you.
I want to go back to a question that I asked of the group, and certainly of the department, too. Individually, I want answers to this. I realize that Columbia River is not a scenic and doesn't apply. But the issue is 1 cubic foot per second is the amendment being, or the proposal being made here. Are you suggesting that 1 cubic foot per second out of the Columbia River would have any significant impact on the survival of either that river or the fish that live and exist in that river? Adam.
Mr. Chair, Adam Sussman with Water Resources Department. I, not being a fishery expert, I'm not going to answer that part of the question directly, but what I would like to say, and I said when you were out of the room, is that the department has already determined in the Deschutes Basin that there's a cumulative reduction in stream flow of at least 1%, if not greater, based on groundwater permits that we've issued since 1995 and based on a number of permits applications that we have in our queue. And the way we evaluate that cumulative reduction is by estimating the consumptive use of those water rights and potential water rights. And so our belief is that even if you limited it to the Deschutes Basin, this bill.
Mr. Sussman, we're aware of that point. I'm asking a very specific question, and I don't think it's necessary that you be a fish expert to respond to that question, though it is on the record that you have admitted not being a fish expert. You would have an idea of the flow of the Columbia River, though, as the from the Water Resource Department. Could you tell us how many cubic feet per second are going down the Columbia River?
Well, Mr. Chair, I couldn't guess what the flow is at Bonneville, but I could tell you in the Deschutes River that the average daily flow is around 4,000 cubic feet per second. And again, not being a fisheries expert, I have been present during presentations made by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I believe they've testified, certainly when we were in our rulemaking in the Deschutes Basin, that a reduction in flow does reduce the usable habitat available to salmon in the
water. 1/4,000 of a foot per second would make this type of an impact?
Mr. Chair, I just couldn't respond to that.
Adam? Or Aubrey?
Mr. Chair, would you like me to respond to the Columbia River question?
That's the question, yes.
I'm... Again, as I said during the last time we had a hearing on this bill, Mr. Chair, where fish biologists have determined that there is a beneficial use which is served by a certain flow amount, and incidentally where there's also an in-stream water right, which is a water right that the state regulates for, our position is that expertise and in fact that water right should be respected just as any water right should be respected.
And I appreciate the fact that we have evaded, on the part of both people, even attempting to come to an answer to the question. And let me be very specific and very, very blunt with this. One of the things that bothers me a good deal about some of these issues is there is not an element of common sense, in my opinion, that comes into some issues of this type. I do recognize that according to the 1995 biological opinion as it came out from the National Marine Fisheries Service, that this would be wrong to take 1 cubic foot per second from the Columbia River, because they have what has become known as a bucket for bucket sort of thing, which I do think the department, even though they may not know the number of feet per second going down the Columbia, it is aware of the bucket for bucket concept. You have to excuse the ignorance of a poor, kind of dumb, uneducated boy from Eastern Oregon when you talk about, such a trivial amount that you cannot measure and try to base policy on this that has, if that is proceeds that way, has a dramatic impact upon the economy of an area, and if you please, the economy of the state. I understand where you're coming from, and my apologies for the question to you on this, and to the members of the committee who may seriously disagree with me on this issue, but it is beyond my comprehension. Excuse me, it's beyond my comprehension how we can take such absolute, dogmatic, rigid positions that are in defiance of any common logic or common sense. I'm sorry for that. We're going to close the work session on House Bill 3220 with that and proceed on. Yes. We're going to reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 174. Yes, Don. And my apologies to you too, Mr. Hefner. I realized that this was the last item on the agenda, and we were trying to deal with our amendment problems that we have, and as a consequence we're looking for those items that were non-controversial and that were complete and ready to go, except for the fact that primary proponents weren't here to bring the testimony to us. So could you explain this to us, why we want it, why we need it, and maybe we can kind of pick it up from there.
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chairman. I'm Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. My apologies for not being here on time. I've learned long ago that the order on the agenda doesn't necessarily mean the way things are taken up, and my apologies to the committee. The Marine Board requested Senate Bill 174 in an effort to reduce the fines for a number of very minor boating violations. In recent years, the treatment of minor infractions for violations has changed from a situation where there is a minimum bail to a base penalty. And for most of our boating offenses, these have been classified as Class B violations with a base fine of $175. The agency can't change that violation to a lower level by itself. We met with a working group of Marine officers and found that about 18 of our violations were ones where we believe the imposition of a base fine of $175 is excessive. Examples include failure to report a lost boat, failure to have a whistle or sound signaling device, not having a proper fire extinguisher, or failure to notify the board if a boat is scrapped or destroyed. We don't believe reducing the base level of the penalty for these minor violations will compromise boating safety. And currently, Marine officers are very reluctant to write a citation for those kind of offenses, knowing that the base fine is $175. The changes have been reviewed by the Marine Committee of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. They concur with the changes. We reviewed the bill with the Office of the State Court Administrator, and they're okay with it. We don't anticipate any opposition to the changes. The bill sailed through the Senate with no opposition. It was on their consent calendar, and on behalf of the board, we would ask your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 174.
Okay.
I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions, Mr. Hepburn?
I have one, Mr. Chair. I was just opening up the statutes just because I'm not familiar with the with all the with the code that's listed here. But question is, I just want to make sure that when you say minor offenses, does not include driving under the influence or any of those?
No. Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, no, it doesn't include any of, or in fact, DUI is a misdemeanor. It's not a minor offense. The list of items that are included with this include such things, as I mentioned before, as fire extinguishers, ventilation systems, marine events, livery records, canceling a title upon scrapping of the boat, some minor things dealing with numbers on the boats, and application things, very minor non-safety items. We were very careful to review this and ensure that it was not compromising public safety.
I have just one follow-up.
Follow-up, yep.
Just inquiring minds want to know. I wanted to know, where do the fees go to? Does it go to the local sheriffs, or does it go to an account that the Marine Board holds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, in years past, the fines from boating violations, along with park and fish and wildlife violations, used to go to the Marine Board and to state parks and to fish and wildlife. But a number of years ago, several sessions ago, all these fines, which go into the unitary assessment, were diverted for other purposes, and so the resource agencies no longer receive the fines back from boating, fishing, and park and recreation violations.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Don Hefner. Do I understand then that sometimes there is a hesitancy or reticence to issue citations because they currently feel that the $175 fine is excessive, your issuers, is excessive, and that's one of the contributors to there being no revenue impact on this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Flores, that's correct. They are reluctant, and in talking with the state court administrator's office, I actually felt there might be a revenue increase because with the lower fine, if they're more willing to write for that type of violation, you actually might bring in slightly more revenue.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, are you leaving? Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Don Hefner? No. Thank you.
Does anyone want to move it down? If he stays, we can do it. If he leaves, we can have a quorum.
Mr. Chair, we need you for a quorum. Okay. So we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 174.
Thank you, Representative Dingfelder. We're not going to open a work session right now on Senate Bill 174. I guess I have a couple of questions that I need to have some resolution to, and I'm not real sure why this didn't have, or why this wasn't referred to judiciary. Do you have any answer for that? I'll reopen the public hearing momentarily. Okay, please.
For the record, Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. Mr. Chairman, in the Senate, the bill was referred to the Senate Transportation and Economic Development Committee, and we were a little surprised it didn't go to judiciary, too, but that's at the pleasure of the the Senate President's office, and likewise, when it came over to the House, it was referred to your committee, and that again is at the pleasure of the Speaker.
I thank you very much, Don. Colleagues, I'm going to wait until I talk to the chair of the House Judiciary and have an opportunity to visit with him about this as to whether we refer it over to House Judiciary or whether we whether he's comfortable with us just passing it out of here. So we will get back and work on it and get it out on our Tuesday meeting. You know, I just want to protect the protocol on this protect, you know, since I sit on that committee, too, I don't want to make the chair mad at me by passing something out that that he wanted to hear. I expect he's not going to be interested in it, but then, you know, be that as it may, I just need to do that.
It didn't raise any red flags in the on the Senate side in terms of jurisdiction. In fact, they were all too happy to put on the consent calendar.
Get it over here.
Get it over here.
Thank you much with that, and I'll close the public hearing then on House Bill
174.
Senate Bill 174. And what we have left, we've got 2138 and 2606, and we are going to be in recess for 10 minutes while the chair goes to talk about something. Mr. Tess, would you help us?
House Bill 2138 defines some terms for the purposes of Oregon Plan. Probably the key term to be defined is recovery, although there are several others that have to be defined to make that recovery term work. There's been a lot of time worked on this bill since it was first heard back in February, and it has been called back from the floor, and now you're working it as it is with some amendments. You have dash three amendments at the present time, that's pretty much the information, Mr. Chair.
Are you through, Mr. Tech?
Oh, yes.
I need to visit anyone. Okay. Okay. Let me provide a little history on this. As we know from the first time this bill was heard, the motivation came from the IMST in one of their reports that they, by statute, are supposed to provide the legislature. The IMST, you know, looking at the oversight, not oversight, at the technical scientific advice to the legislature, told us that fundamentally, before we could really get anywhere with the Oregon Plan, before we could ever really evaluate the Oregon Plan and the successes or failures of it, we needed to have a definition of recovery. This prompted the chair a year ago to 2 years ago in the session to sponsor a bill to put together a task force in the interim to provide us some guidelines, you know, for that. This task force, as you recall, hearing in testimony, worked very hard. Bob Jacobson was the chairman of the task force, and he worked especially hard. You did hear testimony from him when we heard this bill the first time. The task force then did provide us guidelines and language for definition of recovery. Representative Dingfelder and I were ex officio members of that task force, and they We were, you know, both in concurrence with what had been done and what they were suggesting. We passed this bill out of the House, or out of the this body before, and this body, the Water Committee before, and brought it back to the Water Committee because of concerns in the industry. The definition of recovery, as you will find it in the in section, I believe it'll be one sub E, is approximately, not exactly, but approximately the same as we had on the original bill.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question?
Of course.
Can you just alert me to what page and line you were
on page three of the on page two of the amendment, the dash three amendment, line 20.
Thank
you'll
you.
See recovery.
Got it.
Defined.
Thanks.
There's some change in this, but it's fundamentally the same definition that that we had. We have as far as this definition, we have admittedly not talked to everybody in the world, but we've tried to keep the lines of communication open, have worked very hard with the department, Ed Bowles, we've worked very hard with the governor's office, Jim Myron in particular, has been there, and of course in another life before he took his current position, he was also a member of the original task force to put together this language. And we work very hard with the industry that is concerned or was concerned. We've tried to make sure and that the other members of the other interest groups have been generally appraised of you know what was going on, though we would admit that we may not have been able to touch everybody all of the times, but that's the basic nature, I guess, of the process. There's certainly no intention of getting away from the initial aim or objective. However, as we as we were ready to bring this bill back, which would have been back some time ago, we suddenly found ourselves, you know, looking at an expansion of the bill, a significant and I think critical expansion of the bill. Part of this coming from the federal agency, then that one of the federal agencies that will be actively involved in, that has been, will continue to be actively involved in the Endangered Species Act, NOAA Fisheries. And the expansion of the bill was to try to enlarge, if you wish, the Oregon plan to be able to give our state agencies and our governor the ability to be able to go to the federal agencies and seek from those federal agencies 404 exemptions and or incidental take permits for activities that our agencies may be involved in and that may be necessary for the economic well-being, social well-being of the state. As a consequence, the whereas is that you had at the beginning on page one, line four, on through there, are simply obviously statements of reaffirmation of the legislature's intent to work with the Oregon plan. to enlarge, to strengthen, to improve the Oregon plan, which we think has already demonstrated significant success in the objectives and goals that that we have. And then on page three, on page three, number seven and number eight, you know, kind of speak to, you know, what our intention here. The Oregon plan shall remain in place, etc. And then the issue about the governor and his designee, designee, etc. A point of reference for you. You also have in your possession today two paragraphs that address number seven, page three, line five. We will be doing an amendment to delete number seven and add the second of those two amendments that you see. Does everyone have copies in the audience of those, of that sheet? The second of those amendments. We have, in this regard, conferred again, and we'll ask them to come forward in just a moment here, with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And Mr. Bowles will be here to talk about this, and we have, again, Mr. Myron that will be here to talk about it. Both of them are and have helped me with the language as we have worked with it. There kind of clearly is a problem with the number seven, I think, is, as you read that, that it kind of implies that the Oregon plan is going to go away if we ever delist a species. And that certainly was not the intention of the drafters. The Oregon plan is intended to continue. And, of course, it addresses more than just a species. The Oregon plan addresses a whole number, in fact, or all of the species of the state. So with that, I'd like to ask Mr. Bowles and Mr. Myron if you would come up and provide us any and all information that that you have, and where your agency is at, where the governor's at, office is at, and whatever else might be of valuable value to the committee as we continue the deliberation on this, I think, important issue. Whichever is your pleasure. Go ahead, Mr. Bowles.
Chair Jensen and members of the committee, my name is Ed Bowles, Fish Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We appreciate the opportunity to participate in this process of coming up with some clarifying terms for the Oregon plan, and are very comfortable with the amendments as described by the chair. We also concur that the second paragraph under the options for Section 7 is acceptable. Our concern with that was that, as originally written, it could be interpreted perhaps as the Oregon plan going away once a species is delisted. We view the Oregon plan as being somewhat of a facilitator of bringing about balance in the state for societal values, including fish and wildlife. Once that balance is achieved, we feel strongly that measures will have to be in place to ensure that we don't slip back into situations requiring listing. And so that is why the durability of the Oregon plan at some level of adequacy will be required. I have just one other comment on the current changes would just be, as I discussed with the chair, one of the whereases under 16 of page 1 could certainly include the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife if the committee so chose to do that as part of the infrastructure.
Yes, Ed, we'll do that. Then there were some other incidental changes that we will talk about. Mr. Myron.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Myron with the Governor's Office, and I would concur with the statement that Mr. Bowles has just made, and we see this as a very worthwhile improvement to the Oregon Plan, in particular the definition of recovery that the task force worked on for such a long period of time. Getting that into statute will be especially meaningful in the whole context of the Oregon Plan, the State Endangered Species Act, and fish management in general. So we're supportive of the Dash 3 amendments with the proposed changes that were discussed. Thank you.
Are there questions for Representative Flores?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at page 3 and the addition of sections 2 and 3 in the PREN following on page 4. I'm just for my clarification, I'm not understanding that the governor may receive gifts, grants, bequests, endowments, or donations of monies from public and private sources for the purpose of implementing the Oregon Plan. Is that a practice that's currently underway, that the governor receives gifts, grants, bequests, or we're allowing him to do that? And what? How does that work?
Do you wish to comment, Ed?
Mr. Chair, I am unfamiliar with that provision. I'm not able to comment on that.
Mr. Chair.
Well, did you have a comment on that?
Yes.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be better if it said the state of Oregon rather than an individual?
Or the governor or his designee.
Mr. Chair, I was curious why we have this provision in there, because typically we have that in there when it's regarding to a task force or, you know, something that's costing the state. And I wasn't clear why we have it in there to begin with. Actually, I was going to ask that same question.
Well, we're trying to cover, if you please, all bases. As far as why it isn't the state of Oregon, we would understand, even though some of us on rare occasions, very rare occasions, disagree with the governor, that he is the governor of the state of Oregon. He is the chief executive officer of the state. And therefore, just a language purpose, I think, and also as far as governor versus the state. We would go on, and you'd note as you read through Section 2 and Section 3, mm-hmm. Considerable reference to the governor in this. Now, part of this, I mean, we could have used other language and to deal with some of it. It was the chair's intention to really refer to the governor in this case, because as we deal, the concern is, as we deal with the federal agencies, it is really the governor that will carry more weight, with this. I mean, that was... If we look at, the issue, we had some discussion with the governor's office or governor's representatives up in number 7 about where we refer to the governor. And the intention, I mean, nothing that we're going to be doing in number 7 is not going to be done already by the Fish and Wildlife Commission. We understand that. We know that. But the governor is CEO, and if a future commission were to not proceed, we need the buck stop someplace, if you wish, sort of thing. I mean, and I think it will carry more impact as federal bureaucrats, and nothing negative intended in the use of the term, as federal bureaucrats look at this, if they see this language as contrasted to or the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, or the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission. I think it carries more, it's my opinion, and was my opinion, it carries more weight. And that was the reason for the inclusion of the language.
Mr. Chair, Jim Myron again. Just to clarify, I had assumed that this language was either the result of legislative council's input or the chair's input. I just wanted to make sure that you knew that the governor did not request this language.
No. It was not a request from the governor. It was basically the chair's request, I mean, the language. And that language came from working with the user groups, or the user group that we were working with, and the advice kind of that we were getting from people that are certified smart about federal government.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we've just shown that I am not certified smart.
Not so.
Okay. I appreciate the questions. Are there any other questions or...
Yeah, I do have one more question.
Of course. Let's say for everything.
Pretty cool.
Chops it right in there. There we go.
It's another German name.
He's not nearly as good of looking.
These are the first two. We could say something about Freud here, but I'll.
And I'm not as smart as they are either. Yeah. Has everyone who's concerned about this come forward to comment on this? That's what I want to know.
Representative, we had lengthy discussions on it before.
Okay.
The substance of the bill really has not, I don't believe, appreciably changed. We've had an inquiry, and we were going to ask that person to come up after we've. If they have other comments that they want
Thank
to make.
You, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Bolt.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to also mention, just in case it's required, is there is one small typo in the second paragraph. The word is needs to be inserted on the second line between recovery and achieved.
You're talking about the page and...
Yeah, the two options for...
Two options, yeah.
It's just a minor detail.
Yeah. There are a couple of typographical, sort of things that Mr. Bowles has already mentioned, that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has left out on page 1, line 17, and should be included. That inclusion, will be made. There's another place when we talk over on line 27. We have likely to survive prolonged periods of habitat, climatic, and environmental conditions. We don't have oceanic in there, and that word will be added to the final bill as it comes out. You're following where I'm at. The original wording... had been poor oceanic habitat, climatic, and environmental conditions, and we've changed that that are detrimental to a population, and I will have some more discussion with folks on that as to whether poor and striking are detrimental to a population, or whether the statements are detrimental to a population deal with the question of poor. The problem I had with the word poor is that one might define it to be poor ocean conditions, but it might be good ocean conditions for fish. But if it's detrimental to the survival of fish is more what we're concerned with, I think, to salmon than other conditions of the, if you wish, the ocean. But that's a discussion that I will entertain. I'd entertain it now if the committee wants, and I certainly would ask the panel here what your response to that is.
He's the certified smart guy.
He's a fish person. You're the fish person, too. So I, you know, okay.
I used to be.
Now Chair Jensen, he just sets all the policy down.
Oh, okay.
Chair Jensen, our department would be fine if simply the word oceanic were inserted there.
Okay.
Perhaps you could do it in place of habitat because of the environmental conditions, or you could leave habitat in there. That is fine.
Yeah.
And that are detrimental to a population. We're okay with that, or inserting poor. So leave it the way that it is now, just insert oceanic.
Okay. There's another change that the chair anticipates need to be done just for purposes of consistency. And you will notice that there are times as you read through this that we refer to environmental, and there are times that we refer to ecological. And the chair thinks it's probably better if we're consistent than use the word ecological throughout unless clearly indicated otherwise. As such, and I would be open to comments, you know, or suggestions on that as you read through it. Okay. Okay. Other questions from? Okay, Aubrey and Mr. Hagelton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Aubrey Russell with Oregon Trout. We're pleased with the change in Section 7. I'd like to point out, though, I think an issue that's raised that might be addressed at some point by legislative counsel. I'll certainly be trying to understand this. But in Section 7, certainly we support the idea that the Oregon Plan is directed at species, both state and federally listed species. The following sentence, once recovery is achieved for species under the Oregon ESA, is achieved, raises the I think, might be a difficulty. It might not be a difficulty, but recovery is defined specifically in reference to federally listed species, so that you're asking here, you're asking to apply the recovery definition to Oregon.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
The plan, Oregon plan,
mm-hmm.
applies to and is used as a vehicle or tool to work with species that are endangered under A, the Federal Endangered Species Act,
mm-hmm.
and B, species that are listed under the Oregon Endangered Species Act. Okay, going on from that, once recovery as defined in Section 1 E of this bill. Okay.
You're right, but this.
That is not the federal definition of recovery. That's the definition that we are enacting into Oregon statute.
I understand that. You're applying that definition here to species listed under the Oregon ESA, but you're defining the word recovery here so that it depends on listed units, which are, as I understand it, given the copy that I'm working off of, is a listed unit specifies species listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act. So this is I've had this for a few minutes, and it's a question that's been raised in my mind, and I'll be looking into it, and I hope that we can understand better the implications of Section 7 and maybe
Mr. Bolt, the problem hang-up seems to be with listed unit Is that what you're saying? And on line 21, you're saying that's a federal...
The implication might be that it only applies to Oregon species, which are also listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act. That seems to me to be what this language implies. I don't think that's the intent, because as you've stated, it should apply to both state-listed...
Mr. Bowles.
Mr. Chair, that is a okay modification from our standpoint. It just clarifies the impetus of the task force was to focus on the federally listed fish because there aren't many that are not duplicated. Mm-hmm. But there is one example, the Lower Columbia River coho right now, that would fall under state listing without federal listing. In that case, it would be more comprehensive to include state and federal listed. In that case, you would have to refer then to that ORS, which is currently being modified or considered for modification under the State Endangered Species Act.
So instead of referring to 1E, refer to the ORS. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, consistent with 7, you could do it that route, or you could simply under page 2, line 6,
mm-hmm.
You could then reference it there to the ORS.
So would you have to add? Would it be under the federal ESA and the ORS? So you're doing both the federal and the state ESA simultaneously.
That is correct.
Okay.
Be easier to think. Okay.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Shoffler,
I would appreciate it just for I don't need a description now, but if you'd provide me and anybody else that wants a criteria that would justify endangering listing a species just here in Oregon when the federal government didn't seem deemed fit to do so, I'd appreciate it.
Well, I mean, there are probably numerous examples of sure species that are listed in Oregon are not listed under the federal.
For my own?
I could give you not a fish, but the Washington ground squirrel is a species that's listed in Oregon. Interestingly, it's not listed in Washington. It's supposed to be a damn Washington ground squirrel.
Maybe we can put some on that.
Hey, they shot all the varmints, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure.
They have better marksmen, I guess, than we have. Either that or better oats that they have used to feed them with. And then I think Mr. Bowles refers to the Lower Columbia River coho that are listed under the State Endangered Species Act. And we could look at the State Endangered Species Act and the process that the department or the commission needs to go through. And it probably in many ways mirrors what the feds are supposed to go through, but at least it is unique to the state of Oregon, and it is very possible for us to determine that a species is in danger in the state of Oregon that may not be in danger in anywhere else in the world. We also have some opt-out on the new amendments that we have provided to the State Endangered Species Act to deal with the possibility that we shouldn't be listing things like that, but another discussion sort of thing. So,
just for the record, sir, I don't want to eradicate little ground squirrels.
Oh, I had hopes for you until you said that. Okay. Yes, Mr. Bowles.
Mr. Chair, I'd just add, if we are adding that language, it should probably be some sort of, the appropriate term for and or within there.
Okay. Okay. Other questions? Thank you, Aubrey. Appreciate your careful, astute reading. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Les Helgeson, member of the committee. I'd actually requested to speak on House Bill 2606, a related bill, but I do want to thank everybody for their hard work on 2138. I think Native Fish Society would concur with the amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll get there shortly, I think.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Wilkerson, please. Glenn, did you want to? Ray, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ray Wilkerson with the Oregon Forest Industries Council, and my only purpose to come up here is to personally thank you for your patience and forbearance with this bill. It has taken a number of twists and turns as an important piece of legislation, and you've been very gracious to work with our folks in particular. And as you know, we have quite an interest in being as supportive as we can to the state of Oregon in attempting to negotiate a recognition of the Oregon Salmon Plan as a legitimate a conservation plan under the ESA, and we're committed to continuing that process and believe that the additional language in this bill related to that will be useful. And so that was what I wanted to get on the record, and we very much appreciate your patience.
Thank you, Ray, and the compliment is appreciated and accepted.
Thank you.
Probably the person that you need to make the statements to the representative's chief staff, who's had to live with him when the other side of the representative that you seldom see in the committee meeting has been demonstrated or come out. It's reserved for only a very few people to see, which is a liability that goes with those vows that some of us still choose to take. Okay.
Thank you again.
Thank you. Are there other comments with this? Colleagues, we're going to open a minute the work session on 2606 to get some explanations on it. Oh my gracious, is he running on me, Mr. Munn? But before we close this work session, what my intention on Thursday is, or Tuesday next week, is to have the amendments that we've talked about here today and have it all done at that time, and basically to come in and do a tap-tap to take a motion to include the things that we have here, and then simply move it at that point. I'm hopeful. I mean, we've had a pretty lengthy a good discussion on this, and I am very appreciative of all the people who have worked on it. I'm especially appreciative of the department and the hard work they've done. And of help and cooperation we've gotten from the governor's office in working on this. And I do think we have a major piece of and a major addition to the Oregon plan that will be beneficial to us as we deal with this. One of the things, those of you who have visions of grandeur, that someday or another we will be out from underneath of the Endangered Species Act, suggest that it is that in visions of grandeur that the nature of a far more complicated and complex society than we had 100 years ago or 500 years ago has put us in a position of having to make some decisions and having to do some things that our forefathers never even could envision or think about. And so in one way or another, I think we will always have the Oregon Plan or some counterpart of the Oregon Plan present for us to be working with. And while it does sometimes the whole issue does make the chair angry, too nervous, that is simply that's one of those you've seen the cartoon Born 50 Years Too Late or Too Soon That's simply the product of the date of birth. There's not much that any of us are going to be able to do about that, unless you believe in reincarnation, in which case you should have bypassed this century. With that, then, we are going to close our work session on House Bill 2138, and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2606. And to my good fortune, the governor's office is now representative with Mr. Myron, and we would ask him to come and tell us about 2106, why we've got it, and 2606, why we have it, and what our intention and purpose is with it. And there are amendments on this bill that we don't have all necessarily present today, but we'd like to have some discussion on the bill again before we get those final amendments that we'll look at on Tuesday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jim Myron with the governor's office, and the chair mentioned that I had a previous life prior to my current term in the governor's office, and in that previous life I had worked with the chair on the initial concepts behind House Bill 2606. And the idea is that we saw the need to make the salmon trout enhancement program statutes consistent with the Oregon plan and consistent with the whole concept of recovery that had been coming out of the Salmon Recovery Task Force. So my suggestion was that we make these changes to bring that consistency. So that was the original intent, and I think I haven't seen all of the amendments yet, but the concept is sound, and I would certainly support trying to make sure that the STEP program is consistent with the state ESA, with the Oregon plan, and overall fish recovery. So thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Just for the committee's recognition of this, whether we're looking at the original bill or whether we're looking at a -4 amendment or perhaps any of the preceding amendments, I think you'll note that we talk about populations of naturally produced fish belonging to a listed unit. One of the problems with that, as it is written there, it would include what are otherwise maybe referred to as exotic fish, things like bass that are not native to the state of Oregon. And if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Myron was concerned initially and remains concerned about native fish as we had them defined, and that's one of the amendments that we still don't have that is not in there. And I think the intention will be to add after naturally produced native fish to clarify that we're not talking about some piranhas that have been introduced into that are in their second or third or fourth generation and quickly eating everything else in the stream or river sort of thing. So
Mr. Chair, I thought you might be referring to some legislators.
Well,
in describing piranha.
That's an interesting thought. I hadn't gotten there yet, Representative, but that's an interesting. I'll have to run that by my counsel and see what how we can put that in the bill. Okay. Are there any questions then for Mr. Myron? I would like to thank Jim for noting this and bringing it forward. I think you'll note on the original bill that the vice chair from North Portland?
Northeast.
Northeast Portland is co-sponsor, primary co-sponsor with me on the bill, and I appreciate that. But as we were dealing initially with the definitions of recovery, it simply did not dawn on us that we didn't think about the need to include other than salmonids in our discussions of that. And it was only after this that Mr. Myron in his previous life came to me and asked about it, and that's the origin of this particular bill. With that, here's where we, basically where we're at today. So, thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you.
Mr. Eggleston, please. Did you want to have somebody else come with you? He probably comfortable sitting where he is until you throw too many darts at him, and then he may. if I see that look of the gladiator come into his eyes, I will. I'll bring him forth.
I'd like to think we're making peace. I left my darts at home. Chair Jensen, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Les Helgeson, Native Fish Society. Thomas Gilligan, the Oregon chapter of the Federation of Fly Fish, has also asked me to speak on his behalf to House Bill 2606. And we're certainly supportive of Mr. Myron's efforts here. In fact, in his former life, we've discussed this bill at some length, or a potential bill. And I had submitted a Dash 2 amendment, which it's unclear whether you've even seen that yet or not. I did submit a Dash 1, which had some incorrect language in it.
Does that come through the committee chair, or through the committee administrator?
They tell me it did, but apparently none of them have come through the committee administrator. I don't know what's going on here, but I think we're late in the session, and Ledge Council's very busy. So.
Okay. Would you explain Dash 1 and Dash 2, or Dash 2 if it replaced
Certainly.
Dash 1?
Certainly. We added a definition of enhancement,
mm-hmm.
which...
Yeah, we do have that.
We have that.
And that's
then,
why I'm asking for an explanation of it.
Right.
I have.
I think it's consistent with some of the discussions you've just had here to eliminate things like piranhas or snakeheads and that sort of thing. Introduced species are often, could be included here. So it's an effort to tighten things up a little for the purpose of the definition. Also, recovery in my Dash 2 amendment and Dash 1, I decoupled the listed unit part of it, because as it's written now, we would tie recovery strictly to those units which are listed, which would unduly restrict the STEP program to recovering only listed species, and we don't want that type of restriction either. So that was an attempt. The spirit of what I was attempting to do was maintain the definition as it was at that time. Granted, it has changed since then. But I simply took out the listed unit part and tied it to populations. Mr. Bowles and I have had some discussion, and Mr. Myron as well, and I think we've begun a discussion on how to resolve this issue. We have not... I don't think we've gotten quite there yet, and I would like to work with Mr. Bowles and Mr. Myron in resolving that discrepancy to the committee's satisfaction.
Okay. Can I? Where you're at, on this.
Chair Jensen, Ed Bowles, Fish Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I think my primary comments at this time on 2606 is that it must flow from 2138, because that is where the primary debate has been regarding the exact language. Mm-hmm. I think now that we've, at least at the committee level, had some comfort of where that's landing. We need to do a little bit of work to make sure the consistency is there where appropriate. Mr. Helgeson brings up a point of not limiting STEP to only dealing with listed populations and groups of fish. We agree with that. I believe that there are some alternative ways to craft this so that it embraces all species without any problem. We'd like to bring that to you.
Are you concurrent with that, Jim? You don't have to come. I mean, if you are, just Mr. Myron indicates that he's in concurrence with that, and we would appreciate that time is of the essence. And this is not to say, Mr. Helgeson, that you haven't been, you know, diligent in your work on this. It's simply the clock has ticked, and we are where we're at now. May I ask that you, if it's humanly possible, that you try to get something to myself or Mr. Tess today, and we can get it to LC so that we can have it on Tuesday? Is that...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I certainly would be willing to do that. I do plan to spend the day here. I think if Mr. Bowles...
Mr. Bowles is...
And other
Chair Jensen, we have public testimony on our fee bill and Ways and Means, and so I will be here all day.
So you'll have some pop-in and out time.
That's correct.
You
can
work with Mr. Helgeson on that. Okay. Let me leave you with that as... unless the committee has objections or has maybe somebody wants to undertake to do that for them, in which case we'd be happy to see your product.
You can ride herd on them if you want.
You want to ride herd?
Sure.
You have a lot of time?
I'll pop in and out of the floor and check in on them.
Okay. I do appreciate Mr. Helgeson, you're coming forth with this, and appreciate the Department of the Governor's Office wanting to help work this thing through, because we would like to have something that does what we want it to do and that is clean, so that it is subject to the least amount of misinterpretations that we can possibly encounter. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Colleagues, with that, our agenda is completed for the day, and my thanks for your patience and indulgence. We do have perhaps a couple of house cleaning type of items. I assume that Representative Dingfelder is the author of this note to me, although it says to Pete, and I don't know why it's to Pete.
Mr. Chair, we thought that Representative Westling would want to carry.
Well, I understand. Representative, House Bill something 15 and 17 that we passed out earlier. Are at the request of the House, the Majority Leader, Representative Westland, and I think maybe Senator Tarnow, but she can't carry it, can she, on our side? There is the suggestion has been made that maybe... Representative Dingfelder would like to give up carrying, 3215. Thank you, Representative.
I would be happy to.
And extend the invitation to Representative Westland to carry the bill. We don't usually extend to people who are involved in Ways and Means the privilege of carrying bills that are policy bills. They might get confused as they start carrying policy bills and start adding something in terms of numbers to it, and that would concern us. But Representative Westland's been around for a while, and the chair would be comfortable with letting him carry it if there is no objection to it on the part of the committee. So let the record show then that Representative Westland will be the carrier on House Bill 3215 and 3217.
Chairman,
Yes.
You know, I sit on the floor next to Representative Westland, and I share your concern.
It's justified. Representative Crook, are there any bills you'd like to vote on that we...
Mr. Chair, I would love to vote on every bill that we voted on today or yesterday.
Okay.
Or the day before. Yesterday. Tuesday. Excuse me.
The chair requests consent to allow Representative Krupp to vote on House Bill 3215, House Bill 3217 that we have passed out today. And House Bill 3047. And before you vote on 3047, understand, Representative Cook, that this was a love fest bill between Representative Dingfelder and Representative Cruz. You need to consider this support.
Boy, I don't know, Mr. Chair.
3215.
Aye.
The records show that Representative Krupp votes aye on House Bill 3217.
Aye.
Let the record show, Representative Krupp votes aye on House Bill 3217. House Bill 3047.
Go over and beat him up.
Okay.
Okay. Under duress, let the record show that Representative Krupp votes aye on House Bill 3047. And what did we have on Tuesday that you haven't dropped that he might be able still to vote
on? I don't have a Tuesday agenda.
I don't think we voted on anything on Tuesday, but...
I think we did.
Yes, I'm sure we did.
Did we vote on Wednesday? No, we didn't.
Did we vote on that?
We voted on something on Tuesday.
Was it Butler's?
I'm sure we didn't have such a
Butler's hat made, so
we've no.
Set out before.
Yeah, but we'd already voted that bill on it.
Thank you very much.
I've
got all kinds of agendas in here.
Well, it would be helpful we pass any bills to send aside since last week.
Would you?
400 bills.
Would you, please?
Last week.
I can call my
We're going to have some afternoon sessions here real soon, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You'll have to, otherwise we'll get so far behind.
At this point, the chair requests permission for the chair to vote on House Bill 3217.
Granted.
Objection.
I have no objection.
No objection.
No objection. Representative Jensen, how do you vote on that? to do it right.
We'll open a work session on House Bill 32. Well, no, we suspend the rules, so we don't have to do that. Mr. Chair, how do you vote on House Bill 3217?
The chair votes aye.
Let the record show Chair Jensen votes aye on House Bill 3216. 3217.
Thank you.
Tuesday was
3616. What was it, though? I should have him here, but I probably don't.
3616 is the vote I missed.
Yeah.
3616.
Has that been dropped?
No.
Very good. We request unanimous consent that Representative Krupp be allowed to vote on House Bill 3616. Any objections? Hearing none. Representative Krupp, how do you vote?
Mr. Chair, I vote yes.
Representative Krupp votes aye on House Bill 3616. Did we vote on anything else on?
There you go. 3519, person list.
We didn't vote on 3519.
No, I think that was it.
2991, we reconsidered and voted out again and had to vote.
We don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, you've already voted on that.
And, okay. 3616 was my major consideration.
Yeah. Okay. The business having been completed today, and thank you very much. Do appreciate that you're so easy to work with on this, and we would like to try to wrap up these House bills on Tuesday. And at the present time, we don't have many Senate bills. We're not sure whether they're working over there or exactly what, but that's okay. We'll take care of what they have when it gets here.
Well, hopefully, Mr. Chair, that means when our bills get to the Senate side, they'll move quickly because they really have nothing else to do.
That's beautiful.